everybody, and a very warm welcome to you all from the Marketing Society, where today, in partnership with CSM Sports and Entertainment, we are going to be reviewing the decision-making, the implications, and the stories around one of the most dramatic decisions made this year, the impact of postponing the Olympics. My name is Sophie Devonshire, and I'm the Chief Executive of the Marketing Society. We're a global network of progressive leaders. And right now, as marketing leaders, we are committed to sharing the stories, the inspiration, and the ideas to help us all navigate a way through and to thrive in this fast-changing and complex world. Now, more than ever in these uncertain times, collaboration is key. And we've seen time and time again how when we all come together as a collective, we're more successful and can make great things happen. So how's it going to work today? Well, we've got a great conversation planned with some great speakers, and they're going to join us and share their different perspectives and talk about what it means for those involved. We're going to be talking about the past, the decision that was made and how it was made, the present, how everybody's feeling and what they're doing about it now, and of course the future. What happens next? What do we do? And the next stage of all this, now we know that the Olympics have been postponed. So we're going to be taking a little bit of time having a conversation with our great speakers, and there'll also be time at the end for your questions for our guests. So all of you will probably have been on Zoom several times before recently, but just as a reminder, there are some great functions on Zoom to make this interactive and interesting for everybody. So you see at the bottom of your screen there, the Q&A section. You will probably have questions for our amazing guests today. Please post them all the way through, and we'll make sure there's time at the end to ask those questions of everybody. There's also the chat function. Now, the chat function is very useful if you just want to share a point of view on something and express how you feel. And I know that our audience for these type of events tend to be very smart and also very vocal. So I'm sure there'll be some perspectives and some opinions that you want to share. Please use the chat function to do that. And I'd like to ask everybody who's listening right now to help us just check that that chat function works. We'd love to hear from you. We know we've got people from around the world. So I'm going to ask a simple question to everybody listening right now. And if you wouldn't mind just coming to chat, saying hello, telling us where you're dialing in from, and answering this one simple question. What does sport mean to you? Why is sport important to you or to the world? What's the significance of sport? So come into chat, please. Come and say hello. It's always very hard for us all when we're speaking to what feels like an empty room, although I know from the stats that there are lots of you out there. Please come check the chat function and say hello and tell me, what does sport mean to you? Why is it important? Nick, hello. Sport is important because it's the great unifier. Oh, Stephen, a leveller. We're all equal in sport. Interesting perspective. Hello, Hakan from the DC area. The power to bring communities and cultures together. Great. Sport is health. All these different perspectives. Endorphin rush, entertainment. Well, I hope that also today is going to be entertaining for you as well, because I think the conversation about what the implications of this decision have had on businesses and on society, it's going to be really interesting and entertaining. Welcome everybody, those people who should have been in Tokyo. Great to hear from you. Hello Kelvin from Johannesburg. Thank you for joining us all today. We hope it's going to be an interesting and useful session. Let's keep talking as we go through. But now I would really love to introduce the speakers we have for you today. To help us discuss this fascinating topic, we are joined today by, first of all, by Lord Sebastian Coe. He is the President of World Athletics and the Executive Chairman of CSM Sport and Entertainment. You'll all know him for his fantastic work in organising the 2012 Olympics and Paralympics. He said to me earlier, tech is not his strong point, but he does have other brilliant skills, including being one of the UK's most prolific world record setters, the gold medalist, and in many people's eyes, the greatest runner to compete for this country. Welcome, Seb.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure Mo Farah would agree with that.
Let's start with some controversy. But we are also joined by another incredible runner to share more of the athlete's perspectives as well. Adam Jamili, the British sprinter, is a three-time European gold medalist. Adam was the first British man to run sub-10 seconds 100 metres and sub-20 seconds 200 metres. And he was an integral part of Great Britain's first ever sprint relay world championship gold medal. And Adam gave up a career in football to represent his country in the Olympics. Welcome, Adam.
Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
And also to represent the athlete's point of view in this discussion, we have the amazing Hannah Mills, MBE, who is a British competitive sailor, one of the most decorated British Olympic sailors, a two-time world champion and the winner of a gold medal at Rio in 2016. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you. Really excited to be here.
So we're going to be talking about the implications of this great decision on the athletes that are involved. But of course, the postponing of such an important world event has significant implications for the businesses that are involved. I'm really delighted now to introduce three great marketing leaders who are going to share their perspectives on all this as well. Ricardo Fort is the Vice President of Global Sports and Entertainment Market Partnerships at the Coca-Cola Company. And he leads the company's global portfolio of sponsorships and partnerships and events, including the ones with the International Olympic Committee, FIFA, UEFA, and the Special Olympics. Welcome, Ricardo. Great backdrop you have there.
Hello, everyone.
Chris Curtin is also joining us today, the Chief Brand and Innovation Marketing Officer for Visa. And he's played a pivotal role in securing some of Visa's most high-profile sponsorship initiatives, including the successful negotiation with the International Olympic Committee, which resulted in a 12-year extension of Visa's partnership with the Olympics. Hi, Chris.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
And we know that Chris is competitive because when we were talking a few minutes ago, he was already comparing his backdrop to other people's backdrops. So we're going to hear a lot about how he feels about this as well. And last but not least, I'd also like to welcome Aoife McArdle, who is the Global Head of Olympics for Airbnb, where she oversees the vision, strategy and operations for Airbnb's largest landmark 9.5-year global partnerships, intended to drive economic empowerment opportunities for millions during the next 5 Olympic and Paralympic Games. Hi, Aoife, and welcome.
Hi there. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for having me.
And we should come back to talk about your backdrop there, because there's a story behind the lady behind you, isn't there?
It's Alison Phoenix.
Excellent.
Anyway, come back to that.
Seb, we've just been talking in the chat with everybody here and getting people's perspectives on why sport is important for society, for business, for the world. Your perspectives on that?
Well, actually, sport was summed up quintessentially by the speed with which people came into the chat room, the bandwidth of countries and experiences they suddenly brought to the table, and the very definitions. I don't think anybody's been... Nobody's successfully defined sport in 33 centuries, so I'm not going to really manage it in a few moments. But for me, I just instinctively think sport gets to places and communities that very few other activities do. Somebody described it in the chat room a moment ago as the great leveler. It's about health. It's about social cohesion. The one thing for me is that sport reaches out and it shines a light on many of the issues that actually sometimes politicians and our political leaders shy away from. It sometimes gets us a bad rap for going into places that are not always maybe thought to be the right place for sport, but I've never seen sport leave a society where the dial hasn't been flicked in some way, socially, politically, or economically. So, for me, what is sport? Sport is the most potent social worker in any of our communities.
Most potent social worker in any of our communities. Well, in which case, the dramatic implications of a decision like this really are important for us to talk about. It cannot have been easy for those who were looking at this to make that decision. So when you were there in 2012, if you'd been told as head of the organising committee that you had to postpone it or you had to move the games to 2013, what would that have meant?
Sophie, every time anybody even reminds me of that potential scenario, I automatically break out into a cold sweat because it is almost unthinkable. I can't imagine what I would have felt had somebody walked into my office in March of 2012 and said, by the way, it's not happening on July the 27th at 7:30 in the evening, which was the opening ceremony, and that you've got a delay for a year. And there is a, of course, it was the most difficult decision to make. Nobody took it lightly. And, you know, it's one of those decisions where it's very easy to say, well, you should have done it early and you should have known. Nobody knew what was happening. And everybody, you know, when we started out, I remember in my own sport having to make judgments. Suddenly, I felt at the beginning I had months to think about things. Then we were down to weeks. Then very quickly we were down to days, down to hours, and then suddenly you were in this decision fueled environment where you were making decisions sometimes every minute, and the challenge of delaying a games is unbelievable. There is no project management that challenges a city under normal circumstances than the delivery of an Olympic or a Paralympic games. And so when you suddenly say it's going to have to be delayed a year, the first challenge you've got is, by the time we got to the opening ceremony in London, we had about 9,000 people in the organizing committee. We doubled our numbers every year. We started with 60 that won the bid, and then every year you double your numbers. It doesn't take a mathematician to tell you that the big jump is in the final year. And I can remember that one of the tasks I had leading into the games from sort of March, April, May onwards, was just trying to get our teams to grind on, because we were all, including myself, running on empty at that moment. Mm. So when you suddenly say to a team they're not going to deliver the games, not only have you a massive amount of disappointment, you have that suffused with absolute fatigue. So the first thing an organizing committee in Tokyo will have had to have done was to actually allow those people some downtime to regroup mentally and physically to come back for another year. You know, it's a 7-year cycle. You're suddenly doing a year that takes it to 8 years. And then you have to figure out, I mean, it's mind blowing. You then have to figure out all those venues that have legacy agreements, commercial in many respects, immediately after the games, because teams move in, leagues move in. Then you've got the accommodation that will have gone to private developers. And then you have all that temporary accommodation and temporary venues. And then you've got probably 70 or 80,000 volunteers to step down. And then you've got all the broadcast, the insurances, the sponsorships. And that's just that element of it. Then you've got all the international federations who you've got to work with, because they've then got to resequence all their events. Moving an Olympic Games to 1 year later is probably the easy bit, but it's removing only one little piece of the jigsaw, and then having to rebuild a completely new jigsaw, not just for 2021, but for 22, 23, 24, 25. The impact on athletics was a 5-year impact by just removing one event. So yeah, it's nobody would make that decision lightly. What is the optimistic message here? As I actually think the Tokyo Games will be a better games for that delay. And I do remember all of us sitting there in London, you know, with only a few weeks to go, saying, you know, there are lots of little things we might have done differently. There are lots of little things that we would have changed. Actually, over the course of a year, Tokyo will have that opportunity to do that. They will be able to micromanage a few of the challenges that they probably would have had to deal with. They can micromanage those out over the next year. And I think that actually, fingers crossed, if the world moves in the way that we seriously hope it does, then the Tokyo Games, I think, will be a great coming together, which will be sport. But I think it actually will probably be a better games than it would have been in 2020. That's the glass half full version.
But I think everybody at the moment, you know, is focused on, you know, understanding that when some things are inevitable, it's important to look at what the opportunity is. And sometimes having a little more time to get things right can be a positive. But yeah, I mean, just as you're talking about it, I can feel the energy that must have been involved for everybody in making that decision. And then, as you say, getting all the teams, not just...
And the decision is, and the toughest decision you make is knowing, for somebody like myself that was chair of an organising committee but had been through an Olympic Games experience, you know the decision you're making is one that impacts on the most important client group, and those are the athletes. You're basically saying to those athletes, you've got to regroup, it's a year to refocus. And you have to recognise that for some of them, age is against that. Injuries are always haunting you. They're, you know, you're only one injury away from, you know, from oblivion sometimes. So for the athletes, it was a removal from an emotional roller coaster, but it also posed them and their coaches a massive set of challenges because, of course, there's very little competition that's being run at the moment as well.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that then. The immediate implication, you know, Adam and Hannah, I can see your faces as he's talking about that and thinking about how that made you feel. Hannah, what was your initial reaction when you heard that? I mean, I know Diana Asher-Smith was talking about her relief at hearing it was postponed. Did you feel relieved or did it still come as a disappointment?
Yeah, I mean, definitely relief wasn't the first thing I felt. Like Seb said, you know, we're building up for this one event, and definitely for me, January the 1st of an Olympic year is the moment where I flip the switch in my head and mentally. You know, every day I wake up feeling nervous about that Games and about what I need to do and what I need to prepare. So we were kind of in the peak of that build up, and definitely the postponement initially, I was just gutted. I totally obviously understood why and it was the right thing to do, but I guess for me as an athlete, I was just gutted. I felt we were totally prepared, or we had the things in place to be prepared for this summer. Ironically, I think we'd start racing in the next day or so. So just gutted and just took the time to let that sink in, let those emotions come, feel those emotions. And then luckily with lockdown, you know, we did have that bit of time to kind of come to terms with it and reset and refocus. Mm. Yeah.
And Adam, how did you then, you know, move on from the strict timetable of mental and physical preparation you had planned already? You know, how has the decision to delay for a year affected your preparation? Have you been able to train properly at home? Is that sofa a good point for you?
Yeah, I think it's been tough. I think what a lot of athletes were struggling with was being left in limbo. Obviously, for my sport and my event, I'm a sprinter. We work in such short sort of bursts of time that you train 4 years to get a 10 seconds or a 20 seconds perfect. And that's what was so challenging. And so hard to take. And then when obviously governing bodies started pulling their countries out of the Olympic Games, saying we're not going, and there's no official statement being released, I think that was what was relieving. That's what when Diana Asher-Smith said she was quite relieved. I think it was because there wasn't really any ways to train, and the Olympics hadn't really been postponed at that moment. It has affected preparations. I think what Seb said, and for especially my sport, is now that because the Olympics gets pushed back another year, the following year after that, there's three major championships if you're European, and that's then trying to manage your body for that. And then the next Olympic Games is coming up soon after that. It affects everything. And this one decision has a massive impact. I'm very fortunate. I'm only 26 years old, but there are athletes that I do train with that are pushing their mid-30s, and for them they were seeing this year as a last sort of farewell. Do what they can and then get on with their life. And now it's the decision: do I then try it and go for another year? Do I manage injuries? Like, there's so much that you have to work with your coach and your team around you to sort of prep for. But it was the right decision, but a very tough one to process from sort of the athlete's point of view.
Mm. Yeah, and it's interesting you're talking about the coach and the team around you, that bit of, you know, making sure you've got people to help you through that mentally and physically as well, the teams to support.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, everybody at the moment, there are so many things changing in our lives and what we're doing, to have people around you to get you through that. And what about from a business perspective? I mean, Chris, Ricardo, Aoife, now the dust sort of settled and you're thinking about this decision, you know, are there some, you know, positive consequences of postponing? Or what are the major implications for you? I mean, maybe there are some, you know, new opportunities off the back of the postponement you hadn't previously considered. Aoife, well, what about you? There's the things that have happened at Airbnb where you've been able to say actually there are some advantages here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously the impact on the athletes, totally devastating, and couldn't even imagine what it's like with those goalposts being extended for another year. From our perspective, yeah, Airbnb was very new to the Olympic community. We only signed our partnership with the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, in November. So we were sprinting. I can sort of relate to the pressure that you were feeling, but even listening to Sebastian talking about the preparation for the games, we were sprinting and scrambling towards the games because we were just so new to the whole community, had so much to learn. So the extra time is definitely a relief in a way. It's giving us an opportunity to learn from many of the experts here on this panel. In terms of new opportunities, we had already planned as part of this partnership to create a whole category of what we call Airbnb experiences, which are opportunities for people like athletes to share their passion and their time to an audience of millions around the world. So that was already part of the plan with this partnership. But these were supposed to be in real life connections between athletes, fans, and travelers around the world. And obviously human connection in a pandemic is not exactly something that was a good idea. So we had to shut down the entire business of experiences, which was pretty devastating of an impact, not only for Airbnb, but also for our community of hosts who are sharing and depending economically on hosting. And so a few weeks after the pandemic hit really hard, we pivoted for our host community and launched online experiences, where the same hosts instead were finding new ways to share their passions virtually online. And what was born out of that was us building a whole category now of experiences hosted by Olympians and Paralympians. And they started to really grow very fast, very successfully. And actually this week now we've launched a festival for 5 days, kicking off on the day when the opening ceremony was supposed to happen on Friday, the 24th of July. And so we have over 100 athletes, Olympians and Paralympians from around the world, who are hosting experiences with people all around the world. This is an illustration here in my background here of Alison Phoenix, who some of you may know. And she's also been hosting on the platform. So it's been going incredibly well, but the goal really was to shine the light on the athletes during an incredibly, incredibly difficult time, emotionally, economically. And so this festival is to give them economic support, but also human connection, connection with fans around the world at a time where everybody is apart. So it's definitely something new that came out of a really devastating situation.
Well, a great story of, you know, how you responded fast to create something really different, you know, very, very fast, but also thinking about the responsibility you then had to help others and make it happen. And Ricardo and Chris, for you, because you've had such long-term relationships with the Olympics and with this kind of thing, were there some contingency plans in place for you? Was this, you know, something that you'd vaguely thought might happen, or was it anything you'd done in the past to help you be able to respond to this?
For us, we've been partners with the International Olympic Committee since 1928. So there's one of my predecessors that back in 1944 had to deal with a cancellation. Anything similar to what's happening now, it's impossible to plan for. And of course, having more time is always gives you the opportunity to rethink what you're doing. But it's really hard to explain the magnitude of the logistical and impact on the programs that we have developed. Unlike Airbnb or Visa, who operates in the digital world, we print cans and labels, and we have point of sale material. We have trucks decorated, and all of that was ready to go the next day. So now we have to deal with situations and challenges like, okay, so we have a team of 500 people. What do we do with them? We have trucks that are decorated and are not going to be used for the next year. We have to store packaging that has already been printed. So all of that adds to the logistical challenges of what we need to do next. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I agree with Lord Cole that next year when it happens, it will be probably the greatest celebration we have ever seen. So just from a value standpoint, it's going to be more valuable next year than would have been this year, because everybody will be craving for the excitement that sports can bring. So I think that we have to take this step back and look with a more long-term perspective that, yes, there are a lot of very concrete challenges that we have today that we have to deal with. Several of them have financial implications for the business. Having said that, when you look from the long-term perspective, and we are partners with the IOC until 2032, when you look at the long-term perspective, I think it's going to be a net positive impact for the company and for the fans.
It's a great way of looking at the delayed anticipation that will be there and the celebration. You know, I'm already excited about it just as you talk about it. And Chris, what about for you? I mean, the implications for Visa must have been huge, but are there some positives coming out of it?
Yeah, I mean, we started a scenario plan in February piggybacking on what Ricardo said with Lord Cole, there's no question it had a massive impact on us. We were planning on bringing 15,000 cardholders from over 200 markets to the games. We had four waves of CEOs who were going to go there because we wanted to expose those CEOs to what Prime Minister Abe is doing with Japan, which has a rich history of both honoring its past, but also looking forward to its future and had embraced a cashless Japan, amongst other things. It's the third largest economy in the world. So, I mean, we had stuff on cargo ships, coming in from Europe, and just you can actually track these cargo ships on a global radar, and to see some of these cargo ships turn around is to use Hannah's word, gutting. I mean, it's just tough to see.
Yeah.
That having been said, once we started to look at the different scenarios, in February, Visa was of the view that, that the postponement of 1 year was the most attractive of a number of unattractive options. It was better than cancellation. It certainly, in our view, was better than going forward with the games and putting in anyone into kind of harm's way or unnecessary risk. So we were of the view that a 1 year postponement was of the kind of the best of the solutions. And to Ricardo's point, we really do believe that these could be the best Olympic Games in the history of the Olympic Games. And one thing that we take great pride in is since the announcement, we've done three things. Number one is we renewed our commitment to all 100 athletes that are on the Team Visa roster. So if you were on the Team Visa roster in 2020, you're on the Team Visa roster in 2021, assuming you want to compete still. The second is we put out a marketing campaign quickly, which was, this isn't easy. And we had Olympians at home doing either remarkable athletic feats or something to that extent. And it was washing their hands or doing social distancing. And it was just a fabulous kind of uplifting piece of creative, particularly for our employees, but we would argue behind. And the final point is we're in conversations with TOCOG and the IOC about bringing some of the best of Visa to touchless experiences. And we believe we can bring those touchless experiences to the physical layout of the games themselves next year and almost have kind of this world of tomorrow that hopefully the world will come back to and people will be amazed by.
Mm, fantastic. So, once the decision is made, there are things you can't do, trying to find the opportunities for, again, the creativity there, but also the long-term planning, short-term response, long-term planning. Adam and Hannah, you must both have had partnerships in place with brands and sponsors. Were there any plans that changed, or how did you deal with your relationship with sponsors during this period?
For me, I'm very sort of thankful for my sponsors. They've been very accommodating for myself. Nike, my big sponsor, Have been great, and Muller as well have been fantastic, sort of leading up to extending contracts and stuff. But for a lot of athletes, that was what the big worry was, especially in track and field. A lot of athletes, for sponsorship and for actually income, they rely on these sponsors, because it's hard to make a lot of money from the sport to really live by, unless you're really, really at the top level. And a lot of kit contracts come to an end at the end of an Olympic year, and obviously if there's no opportunities to compete, why should a Nike or Adidas or a Puma or New Balance or whoever renew your contract, because you haven't proved to them that you can compete? So that was what has been quite a big worry for a lot of athletes. For myself, I've got great relationships with my partners, and talking to those guys and figuring out next steps. But yeah, that there is a massive worry amongst athletes that will companies renew contracts, because like I said, there is no Olympic Games this year, and why would companies then pay athletes an extra year for sort of nothing? So it's been quite tough, but for my own sponsors and who I work with, it's been okay. So yeah, I'm pretty lucky to be in the position I am, I guess.
Hannah, anything to add? It's all been okay for you?
Yeah, I mean, similar to Adam, you know, just having really open communication with our sponsors really early on to make sure everyone kind of understood the implications and getting creative with what we could do in this time period. I think the biggest sort of worry for me was, so I'm a International Olympic Committee Sustainability Ambassador, and we had some really cool projects lined up before and during Tokyo 2020. And I know budgets are now obviously with the postponement a lot tighter, so some of that stuff that's really important to me might not happen next year, but yeah, we can keep our fingers crossed.
But I mean, I think on that point, Hannah, you know, I know you've done a lot in the last year to really use your time to help with that, given sustainability is so high on the agenda both in sport and in business and society at the moment. How do you think the Olympics and sport as a whole can then play its part in creating a more sustainable world for the future?
I think sport is instrumental in sort of creating the world that we want to see in the future. I think sport, like nothing else in my mind, really has the ability to unite business, governments, you know, people from all over the world to a common purpose. And there is no bigger common purpose right now other than coronavirus than climate change. So the Olympic Games can play such a huge part in that. And what I'm really passionate about is how the athletes can play a role in that. You know, athletes, I know I've heard Lord Poe say that athletes' voices are sort of listened to and respected. And for whatever reason that is, I think it's right. And so, you know, how can we utilise that voice at events like the Olympic Games? How can we utilise the brands and the sponsors to collaborate and to showcase what's possible within the sustainability world and what's coming forward? Yeah, so I think it's got a huge role to play. It's just how can we harness that power and how can we use it for the good?
Sophie, can I add something here?
Yeah.
Just one thought, because, you know, Hannah and so many other athletes and federations have been working with the IOC, and you know, we are lucky to be involved in some of this work. It's interesting because when you talk about sustainability for athletes, it really depends on where you are in the ecosystem. So for a sailor or for someone that deals with the water and oceans, plastic in the ocean is the biggest problem. When you talk to the Gulf Federation, their problem is water consumption because they consume the water intensive. And then when you talk to the athlete community in general, formulation of products, what's the right product to, you know, that to help the athletes to reach what their performance goals is another issue. So all of that are areas that are very important for you know, for the athletes. And I think the IOC has been doing a good job in engaging some of us, and Coke can play a big role in that, in all these areas. So we are trying to be involved with that as well, in, you know, all the above items that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Sophie, I think there's another really important element here that we shouldn't lose sight of. It doesn't really matter where you look at the research, it's pretty uniform within a few percentage points. And that is, there's been a massive increase in physical exercise and activity during lockdown. You know, there are some research teams that are claiming it's as high as 88% in the last 4 or 5 months. For track and field, actually, athletics, that's a very good asset to have, because the majority of that has manifested itself in people that are running and walking. And I think that when sport comes into the post-pandemic world, there is a massive opportunity. There's a massive opportunity working with global partnerships in the commercial sector to form those types of alliances. But equally, I think there is a great opportunity now to form those alliances at local, regional, and national government to help that, where sport is actually uniquely placed to help people on that journey to maintain that level of physical activity. And, you know, if you look at, we started off going into the pandemic with people saying that this was the great leveler. Actually, I probably used the same expression myself. It became pretty clear pretty soon. It's not a great leveler. It's hit those communities with immune systems and those communities that are at the wrong end of the socioeconomic groupings are harder than it's hit anyone else. And I think this is where sport, if it's clever and smart, can actually be the catalyst, the bridgehead, that governments, through sometimes health departments and sometimes through their own agencies, can do. But sport actually can bring some stardust to that, that can actually make a huge difference. And for instance, okay, it was before the pandemic, but we have Ricardo quite rightly was talking about, you know, if you're water-based, it's plastics. If you're golf, then it's water consumption. For us, it's clean air. You know, we have millions and millions and millions of people do what we do in the course of a month by way of exercise and any other physical activity. And we've got to be really careful that we're not encouraging people into forms of exercise that are going to reduce cardiac, back, all sorts of issues, and then to replace it with another set of pathologies, which is we're encouraging them to train and compete sometimes in participation runs in air quality that's just simply not good enough. So our partnership with UNEP through the United Nations around clean air has been a really important part of reaching, of getting our sport to reach into areas that it hadn't traditionally reached into, and actually engaging with young people who are at these big crossroads in what I would describe as these big moral hotspots. And Hannah's right, you know, beyond COVID, climate change is where most people of my kids' age are focused. And I think sport, I think there's a massive opportunity for sport coming out of this and into a post-pandemic world to be even punchier about what it has to offer.
Because it's bringing people together, because it's adding the stardust, the stories and the voices that are being heard, and because it can create unity across the socioeconomic divide, the geographical divide, all those things coming together. And I think, you know, we started this by talking about collaboration, and even just in this conversation here, we're talking about governments, businesses, athletes, you know, everybody coming together to work out what are the most important and complex problems we can solve together. But Adam?
Sophie, I was going to say, I agree completely with what Hannah and the guys are saying about, once we're post-COVID, the biggest issues are what, climate change, water consumption, pollution, and obviously all eyes are going to be on athletes at the Olympic Games next year. If it goes ahead, hopefully it goes ahead, but all eyes will be on the athletes. Is there not a little bit of a problem with athletes, obviously with what's happening with Rule 50, being able to even speak out about that? Because I know a lot of people want this sort of gone, and I'd just be interested to see, because obviously sponsors can say what they want to say and big corporations can say what they want to say, but most eyes will be on the athletes. So it's going to be quite difficult, I think, to actually incite that sort of change and push for that.
Yeah, if I may chime in, thanks for raising that, Adam. A couple of points actually to build on 2 points that you said, Adam. One was about Rule 50 and you know, where athletes can really raise a voice. But secondly, the limitations with sponsorships and the dependency on the games, etc. Well, one of the things that we're really trying to do with this this category of Olympian and Paralympian hosted experiences is very much to address those two things. First of all, it's to give athletes a podium or a voice to share their stories, to share whatever messages they want to tell the world in another platform. And this is a platform which is giving them visibility to the world. And we are increasingly seeing athletes who are using the platform to share their voices and talk about sustainability or anything that they're passionate about. But secondly, it is very much designed to benefit the underdogs, the athletes who don't have the big sponsorships, and the athletes who are dependent on all of those competitions that have come to a halt because of the pandemic right now. And so this festival happening this week is very much to give it a boost. And we have some fantastic athletes like Allyson Felix, we have Naomi Osaka, we have Jackie Joyner, like a lot of incredible athletes. And they have actually all stepped in for this festival to help the athletes who don't have the big sponsorships and who are desperately depending on this economic support right now. So they're bringing visibility to give it a boost and giving these athletes a podium. So that's what it's all about. And it's also trying to kind of move away just from purely dependency on sponsorships and try and keep that spirit of Olympism and Paralympism, keep it alive 365 days a year so people can talk about it rather than concentrate it over 17 days every 4 years or every two years.
To build on Adam's point, I mean, I think, look, if COVID-19 hasn't taught us anything, it's taught us, at least for me, how interconnected and interdependent the world is, which I think is effectively at the core of climate change. It's at the core of a number of the different things that we face. And the Olympics has always been this, magical, theatrical, unifying force that has all sorts of elements to the cocktail that suggest that it wouldn't be countries competing with each other, pinnacle of the athletics category on the biggest of stages. And yet somehow you put people in a village and somehow the things that they remember decades from now are the people and the relationships that they met or the sports that they wouldn't have otherwise attended. And somehow the media does so well about making the humanity of the athlete come to life right before the competition. You get invested in his or her story. So to Adam's point, I mean, I think it would be a shame if when we come out of this, knock on wood, that we couldn't use the Olympics in Tokyo in 2021 to kind of uplift and elevate, humanity. And leave the world a little bit better because of the Olympics, not just bring the world to Tokyo, but bring the spirit of the Olympics to the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a great aspiration. And by having some more time to think about that and bring it together, potentially that's more possible. And potentially we all see the urgency and the need for that right now more than ever. There's a lot of conversation in here about how things have quickly evolved and changed. And I know there's some questions coming through, and we'll get into the questions with everybody. But having to adapt and evolve everything you're doing in terms of the business side of things, today. There's also then planning both the athletes and the business side of things. What happens next year? We don't know what's going to happen next year. We've all learnt not to assume that things are going to go according to plan. Aoife and Ricardo, well, maybe Ricardo, you can talk about, maybe a little bit about your sponsorship strategy for next year, and are there any uncertainties about fans not being in attendance or any of the changes to the structure of the games? Are there things for you in terms of sponsors where you are trying to scenario plan for uncertain times next year as well?
Sure. Sorry, just have to pause the sponsorship.
Never knowingly underbranded.
Just in case you haven't noticed. I think it depends on where you are in the ecosystem of sponsors. Sponsors that are short-term sponsors that come and go, they are going to suffer more, and they are probably more planning to cancel than then continue to do it. For us here represented, you know, as long-term partners, global partners, I guess the first realization is, yeah, there is a delay in delivery of value that we acquired, but the value will come. So the plans and the strategies, they shouldn't change because of that. There's a lot of short-term tactics that have to be adapted. But having said that, there's going to be a great event next year, and we'll be able to do what we're planning to do, hopefully even more. So from a strategic standpoint, it doesn't change. When you look to more to the granular level, as I said before, there are implications because, you know, some of the global sponsors are involved with a lot of different events, with a lot of different right holders, and the calendar is going to be messy, and it's going to be messy for several years. And we have to figure out how to, you know, how to work with all the partners in a way that makes sense, and we can still drive the growth of our businesses in a way that we take advantage of the Olympic partnership, but also, you know, in our case, we have, you know, Euro happening next summer as well. You know, there is right after, we're not talking about this, but right after Tokyo, we have Beijing coming. So how any brand can promote two Olympic Games, which are so important, with a window of 6 months. So all of that needs to be adjusted, but that's not on the strategic level. This is more on the execution level, if I may say so.
But messy times ahead from that point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say that linked to your question, Sophie, but also we're very new to the Olympic community, but we did do a small domestic partnership in Rio in 2016. And as a result of that partnership, which happened literally just 6 months before the games, 85,000 guests were actually able to attend the games very much at the last minute, on average paying about $50 a night. And they were staying in homes with local residences across Rio. And as a result of that, $30 million were generated for local residences of Rio. It was earnings for locals. And so, going back to Hannah, your sustainability goals, there's a big, ambitious goals that we have from driving sustainability with this partnership as well. We want to see very little unnecessary infrastructure built and created specifically around the games. And in fact, in Rio, the World Economic Forum did a study after the games, and they calculated that had those 85,000 guests needed to stay in hotels, it would have required the construction of 257 hotels specifically to host those people. So just to come back to your point, Sophie, I mean, the goals that we have are to make the games affordable, accessible, and open it up to a lot more people. And so on the one hand, opening it up to the community of residents and allowing people to stay in homes and connect with locals is one solution. But obviously with this pandemic, I think we should be thinking outside of the box and thinking of other ways to do it as well, be it, there's virtually, as we say, people are connecting, but there's also maybe opportunities for people to do things nearby without traveling all to one place in Tokyo. And so I think with what's happening in the world right now, rather than just focusing on how can we make the 9 million guests that were supposed to attend Tokyo in 2021, how can we find a way for 90 million people to be participating in completely different ways?
So asking a different question about how we can create a different way of impact and the opportunities that gives us. And Seb, I just wanted to ask a little bit about from the IOC's point of view for the rights holders. Are the things that they are doing or should be doing to help the partners navigate this tricky situation and to bring all this?
Yeah, I'm not intimate with the workings of the IOC, but yes, they will be. I mean, we work very closely with them in London. Mm-hmm. Look, the partnerships that tend to prosper around the games are those that embed their brand in systematic, incremental and sequential ways. It's a very, very different world. It's not your classic, if there ever was one, it's not your classic sponsorship. It's not eyeballs on a shirt and maybe a 2-year deal where you might get a third rolling year out of it. You know, the one thing that everybody that knows that makes a success, and Ricardo's on here, Coca-Cola, as he knows, has been there since 1928. I can't remember a time in my own sporting career, and I'm going back many years, where they haven't been a huge part of that landscape. And the one thing you know is you can't gobble all that up in just some hospitality boxes. There's no branding because the Olympic venues are clean venues. So you really do have to work very, very hard around activation. And the activation for many of the partners is not necessarily through sport. We've heard really good examples already of where activation takes actually the games into some really important areas. I remember in London, you know, we had sustainability partners. Yes, we had an automotive partner, but their ambition was to be the cleanest automotive category by the time they got to 2012. And if you look at all companies like BP, the way they have activated around the cultural community. And EDF did massive amount of work in schools and education programs. So actually, the great thing about those commercial partners is because they're world-class businesses, a good organizing committee will realize the one thing about a world-class business is it employs world-class people. And they can actually help you deliver the games. Many of our secondments came from our partners. And we were able to meld those skill sets to our already, to an already formidable skills base. And that's really important. So I think there are lots of things that, and Ricardo's right, I think there are lots of things that tell me that Tokyo will probably be a better games than it would have been in 2020. We would have probably been a better games in 2013. I'm glad we didn't have the delay and the attendant panic that probably went with it. And looking forward, yes, there will be a fallout here. You know, we don't know how long this situation is going to run for. Yeah, we've got football back, but without crowds. Actually, we do have an athletics meeting coming up soon in a Diamond League format where we will have crowds. But, you know, the challenge is really, as Adam and Hannah know, the challenge now is for the athletes to regroup. The smart ones with great coaches will do that. Yeah. I've no doubt about that. Coaches will play a really important role in all that. And, you know, the one thing about, you know, an Olympic athlete is they tend to be fairly resilient. They do bounce back. They learn to live in a world where bouncing back is not an alien issue for them. So I think most of them will come back next year and will be stronger. And in a funny sort of way, they've been communicating better. You know, we set up an athletes fund for 200 athletes that really were in serious, really bordering on destitution. Uh-huh. And that's important. And yeah, and the athletes do need a voice going forward. One of the few federation presidents that has actually said, I'm absolutely happy for our athletes to take a knee. If they choose to, they must have the right to, if we're asking them to connect with the world they're living in, then it's important that they're able to say what they feel.
So this is giving an opportunity to discuss some of these important issues.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're going to come on in a second because there's some great questions coming through from the audience. But can I just ask you, Seb, you talked there about resilience. This has been the most intense, interesting, crazy few months for everybody personally, as well as for your businesses, your sports training, whatever. Is there one thing for each of you where you actually want to either, something you've changed or something you've learnt from this period that you want to make absolutely sure that you personally make sure you continue with, or you never forget having been through all this personally? Chris, is there something for you that you just want to keep and not forget from this period that you'll make sure you'll continue to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing is the very team that was planning for 2020 within Visa is the very team to whom we turned for 2021. And, I think at first it was rather jarring. I mean, not to the level of the athletes, but these, you know, the team at Visa works for years getting ready for this. We're the exclusive payment provider of the games physically and digitally, and we try to showcase a preferred future to the world. So this is no inconsequential effort. And to Seb's point, like, these are the best of the best in their category. And so it's tough for you just to sit back kind of overnight and say, look, we're going to pivot. But it's those very people to whom you need to turn to make that pivot elegant and make it kind of useful and beneficial to the company. And so kind of once you kind of go through that process with them, you're going to be the better for it. So I think one lesson that I've learned is when you've got the best to your left and right, you stick with it and, you know, you rely upon them because the end product's going to be a lot better.
Make sure that team continues to work together. What about for you, Adam? One thing, be pithy.
I think for me, it's just about myself and my character and professionalism. In a time where there was no sport at all, can I get up every day and I have no access to a track? I've got to train at home. Can I get up every day and stay professional and live the way I need to live as if the Olympics was going ahead and not just eat all the bad food and start drinking and going out and not training properly? And some athletes did that. And that's a true test for me was can I be professional? And for me, I stayed completely professional and motivated through that time. So for me, I was amazing. Really happy with that.
Yep. Ricardo, did you say professional and motivated through this time? What's the one thing you'll take away from this as a learning?
I think that the absence of sports was a good reminder to everyone how important sport is for our lives, how much it helps us to express ourselves, connect with people, and it's a big part of who we all are. If you are an athlete, a fan, an executive, whatever it is, sports say something about you and help you express who you are. And I think the absence of sport throughout this month, it was a good reminder. And that's why I'm optimistic that when it comes back, there will be this urge to consume more, to be more engaged, to be more part of it by everyone. It's going to be even a bigger part of our lives.
So you're taking that optimism away. Mm-hmm. Aoife?
Yes, I was going to say the work environment has completely changed. Airbnb is in the travel industry, one of the hardest industries hit by the pandemic as well. And we're convinced that the travel industry will never be the same again. So going back to your question, I would say the games will never be the same again. But that's not necessarily a negative. I see that as a positive. And I think that we look back at this time and it's going to drive new initiatives and opportunities and changes from a sustainability perspective, but also for many different reasons. I think we're going to see big changes and so yeah, I will say the games will never be the same again.
Hannah, something from this period that you want to make sure, or something you've learned or you'll never forget?
Yeah, definitely for me, the ability to switch off and take a step back and reflect, I think it's been really, really important. And I think we all go at a million miles an hour, 365 days a year, a lot of the time. And this enforced period of kind of slowing down and doing more things online, on Zoom, buying ourselves more time, less travel, all that kind of stuff. I've just found it a really insightful time to kind of look at myself, at my sport, at the sustainability side of things, other passions I have in life. So I just feel
change
really fortunate.
Of pace. Change
exactly,
of pace.
Yeah. A change of pace. Yeah.
Yeah. And Seb, what about you? Anything in particular you just want to make sure out of this?
Yeah, look, if you'd said to me that, technology, which was never my sweet spot, has actually completely made me review the way I think my sport should operate.
Yeah.
You know, we are more connected now. We have 214 federations. We're more connected than we've ever been. I'm able to speak all the time to member federations, athletes, area presidents. And one thing, I will never, ever sign off 8 people flying 8 time zones to make a 50-minute presentation to get back on the plane and possibly share supper with us before they disappear. It's no way to operate. It makes no sense. If you have a sustainability strategy, then live to it. And I think a lot of businesses will revisit just that. You know, you don't want to lose the human interactivity from life. That's really important. But I do think most of us now see that was out of kilter. And there are things that we can do that actually make our businesses smarter and we can actually help save the planet in the same breath.
But it is fascinating. I mean, just hearing the stories today and reflecting on how much more globally connected we are, ironically, at a time when we are isolated, and the opportunities to realise what collaboration can do, and that we can't solve these problems alone, but by coming together, using technology, there is more that can be done. Couple of questions coming through from the audience for you all that I'd just like to ask. And actually, there's probably a really straightforward one, and you will have to answer it in one word, which is, how confident are you all that the Olympics will go ahead in 2021 and in the way we all anticipated this year? Very not one word answers, everybody. Who's feeling confident?
We have to be. That's the only way we can think, I think, as athletes.
Yeah. Anyone?
Hopeful.
Optimistic. Brilliant.
Yeah, and I think that anything that anyone say will be a guess. So it's almost irresponsible to answer the question other than optimism.
Yeah, I believe they'll happen, but they'll be different. Very different.
I think what's really interesting, we've seen for years that, you know, in marketing, that actually often you need to make a decision about things not being 100% certain. And certainly right now for all of us, you know, being as optimistic about things and making plans, but now we are all prepared for things to change at the last minute, I certainly think. A couple of sponsorship question coming through for some of you in terms of the thoughts surrounding sponsors' hospitality packages. Do we think the sponsors are still keen to put investment in this area, or is the focus now on visible sponsorship?
I wanted to understand exactly what the question meant by hospitality packages. I think one of our goals with this partnership is to increasingly provide opportunities for fans, travelers, athletes to stay in homes, to have that local economic impact for cities and communities, like I've said before. So, but it's not necessarily linked directly to sponsorship. It's more providing economic opportunity to all of the different communities as part of the games. But Chris, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, over the course of the past, you know, 6 or 8 months, I think we've been able to look at adjacencies and see how they've not only kind of substituted for events, but they've frankly at times improved them. I think the NFL draft was a good example of that, where, you know, they found ways to, you know, do it not just differently, but in some instances better. I mean, you know, to this isn't a focus group of one, but to see an NFL player picked and have his younger brother or mother next to him hugging, that entire euphoria behind them in their home, I find a lot more appealing than an agent giving a high five to someone wearing a NFL football cap. You know, it just, to me, it brings out the humanity. So to the question, I think that a lot of this is going to provoke a new age of creativity about how you export experiences and how you bring experiences to the world, even if it is occurring in a singular destination. And I think it's going to, I think we're going to be impressed, and we'll be the better for it, because the experiences will be so much richer.
Provoking a new age of creativity where things will be richer. I think there's definitely something there. There's lots of questions coming through just about, you know, actually this changing things for you, Hannah and Adam, from an athlete's perspective. Have you actually used this time to think about what your career could be post athletics, or are you still focused very much on what's next?
I definitely have. I was planning to retire in a couple of weeks' time, actually. It's definitely meant I've thought more about that, and I've done an online 8-week sustainability course, and that's definitely where my passion lies in terms of educating myself further, to put myself in a place where hopefully I can unite my two passions, sport and sustainability, to create a better world.
I think this is, I agree with Hannah, said I'm not planning to retire in a few weeks' time, which is lucky. I'm hopefully going to go for a few more cycles, but you've had so much time on your hands to plan and put forward what you want to do. For myself, it's sort of sports governance, and that's sort of route that I want to pursue. Similar to obviously what Seb is doing now, he's president. So it's given me time to sort of put in place sort of plans and get the right contacts. And for now, the job is just to run as fast as possible. And then post-career, hopefully that can all happen. So not too much thinking about it, but yeah, it's nice to get some cogs moving now.
So you're thinking about what next. Ricardo, Aoife and Chris, I know that you're also thinking very much about how to manage next year and then beyond it. And there's a question that's come through from Pauline, just in terms of, with going back to your point, Ricardo, with that significantly reduced lead into the next games, only a 5-month gap before the start of Beijing in 2022, how are you going to maintain focus on Tokyo and keep the momentum? What are you going to do in terms of teams and plans? Do you have a solution for that yet?
Well, there are two ways of looking at it. The first one is having two games so close together is a problem. And the other one is just extension of the window of activation and promotion. So instead of having the 3 months leading to the game plus a month, now we have, you know, 8-9 months where the Olympics are going to be top of mind in front of everyone, summer and winter. So it just gives more opportunity. And this is how we're looking at it. We are trying to get what we developed for Tokyo and adjust and adapt, winterize it to make sure it's still relevant to the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing.
Yeah, from my perspective, it's couldn't agree more with exactly what Ricardo just said. It's a time to be creative, scrappy, entrepreneurial, also creative from a budget perspective, and actually having the two games close together, I think it gives an opportunity to merge some of the themes and some of the messages that you're trying, or the impact that you're trying to have, and build it from summer straight into the winter games, definitely.
Brilliant. So what, for all of you, if we think about everybody listening to this, you know, going through similar things in the future where suddenly you're hit with, you know, one of the biggest decisions that is beyond your control, is there any advice that you would give people about how to do it? Because what I can hear from all of you, there's clearly a mindset thing coming out there where you're all finding ways to get through this. Seb's pointed out that some of you at least are resilient in it all. Is there any advice that you would give people in terms of dealing with this kind of dramatic change? Seb, you're nodding?
Yeah, I think it's really important, you know, organizations that survive these situations actually communicate more, not less, during crises.
Yeah.
And they're very upfront. They communicate liberally and they consult. And during the tough decisions that we were having to deal with, the technology that, you know, links us today was hugely important with that. I don't think athletics has ever been better connected, and everybody knew the decisions that were being made. They were contributing to it, and then they sat behind them and were able to defend them because they've had some skin in the game at the same time. So it is collaboration, it is building on those resilient relationships. But it is communicating, and it's communicating and not mixing messages. It's consistent. It's the consistency of the communicating message.
Communicate consistently and collaboratively. Make sure that has, will any of you, Ricardo, Chris, and Aoife, will you communicate earlier in terms of what's happening, earlier than originally planned in terms of supporting what you're doing with the, I guess you're all doing it a little bit now, but is there a timing change that's come out of that? Chris, are you changing your timing?
No, I don't think there's timing changes. I think that, you know, part of what I've experienced over the past, you know, hard decisions just don't age well. I mean, they're going to be hard tomorrow. They're going to be hard the day after. And so, you know, I think part of it, to the conversation we were just having, is really just kind of carefully and cleanly laying out the different options and the different alternatives, not putting a bias in there, not steering the decision or the conversation in any one particular direction, but say, you know, here are the 3 or 4 ways this could unfold. Let's objectively walk our way through it. And on the other end of the tunnel, here's what would have led you to believe that this was the right decision. So, you know, how important do you place, what kind of like importance do you put on that filter or that factor? Is something that is incredibly important, particularly in the middle of a crisis. People look for calm, they look for dispassionate, they look for, this is how we could think about it, you know, personalities.
Yeah, to give people that sense of calm and, you know, to the sense of opportunity that's coming out of it. And definitely from everything we're hearing from you all today, you know, I'm coming away from this feeling optimistic and positive about the out of something that was so hard for so many people. Although there are surprising stories of the implications of it, there are also surprising stories about the lessons learned, the creativity that everybody can use to do something about it, and how everybody has been both personally and professionally responsive and moved fast to make things happen, but also responsible about looking at what we can do next. It's been an incredible session. So thank you so much, everybody, for speaking today. Thank you, Seb and Hannah and Adam and Ricardo and Aoife and Chris. We've covered so much, and I could carry on talking to you all for hours. Thank you for your time. We are going to ask everybody who's listening to give a little bit of very quick feedback. There'll be a poll that'll be about to turn up on screen, so you can tell us whether you thought today was useful or any feedback. It should only take you a couple of minutes to do that. But whatever everyone else thinks, I think this has been fascinating in terms of us talking about the power of collaboration, the power of creativity in responding to things, and what sport can do to unify all of us and help us address all kinds of other opportunities, whether it's from a business point of view, a sustainability point of view, a societal point of view. There is so many stories ahead of us around this. If anyone's listening today who isn't currently following the Marketing Society on LinkedIn or Twitter, come and keep in touch with us. We'll be sharing some insights from today as well and the things we're doing. And I'd love to hear from anyone who has any feedback or thoughts. I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to answer every single one of the questions, but we'll continue to share some ideas from today. And actually, just a quick plug for a couple of other really interesting things coming up in terms of storytelling and conversations. It's a busy week for us at the Marketing Society, because tomorrow night we have our awards program, our Brave Awards program, which celebrates some exceptional marketing leaders. And it's the first of its kind in a virtual format and really fun. So if you haven't got your place, there are still a couple of tickets available. Come and join us tomorrow night. And on Thursday, we are also having a global conversation. So again, using technology to bring together our hubs for people who are talking about the evolving role of the Chief Marketing Officer and what role marketing has in an interesting future. So I hope you can all join us for that. I hope you'll join me in thanking these amazing speakers today. It's been a fascinating conversation and really appreciate your time and your candor and your honesty. There's lots of comments coming through on the chat with everybody saying thank you. I know you're all busy trying to work out what to do next. So thank you for being part of it today. Any last words, Seb, as you listen to all this? We started this by talking about the role of sport and why it made you feel optimistic. How do you feel at the end of all this?
I feel very optimistic. I think that the ecosystem is in great shape. And I do genuinely think that sport at every level will come out of this stronger. There's never been a more important time for elite and community-based sport to flourish, and it can play such a big role, and a bigger role, actually, beyond the field of play.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the Olympics next year and to seeing all of you and the role you play and bringing everybody together. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening today. It's the end. Goodbye.